advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world famous Sofa King podcast.
Please read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
Not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
With me, Todd. You say funny things.
Hello and welcome again to another episode of the Sofa King podcast. We are recording not at our normal time. We have met up on a Wednesday because Brent is starting to slowly drink every day of the week.
So we have to come down here.
Yeah, multiple days of the week now to record.
Just to make you feel better.
We like to empower him.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a weird nostalgic thing happen just now when I drank that. For some reason, I was sitting there waiting for the intro to stop, and I was thinking about the 4th of July. I was like, why am I thinking about fireworks? It's because that's smoky. And it was triggered some weird, like,
weird
part of my brain.
Yeah. Factor.
I'm just that tired, I guess.
That's strange.
Yeah. That's weird. You need to put caffeine on that computer so it doesn't go down.
I do need to put caffeine on that computer.
Those of you who don't know what that is crack for Macs.
Crack for Mac.
Yep. Today we're actually have a special guest going to be on. They're going to call in Zoltan Istvan.
Yes.
Am I saying his name correctly? He is... He
says it a little different. The last name we're butchering.
Istvan? Istvan?
I don't know. We'll get it direct from the horse's mouth here in a minute. But before we say more about horses' mouths, we should talk about delicious human mouths and hot sauce. And as always, much shout out to El Yucateco for all the love they give us and the delicious hot sauce. But I actually saw a thing this week that I know Brad's going to love in particular that... On a morning interview on a hip hop radio show, a bunch of black hosts asked Hillary Clinton what's the most important thing she carries in her purse, and she said a bottle of hot sauce.
Oh, so we got to get Hillary Clinton.
And everybody thinks she did it because she's pandering to black audiences that often, like a lot of black people, carry their own hot sauce. It's usually Louisiana.
Is that a thing?
Tabasco. It is a thing.
Black people carry their hot sauce.
It's a thing. Huh. And when I saw that, I thought maybe Brent isn't such a weirdo. He's just kind of black.
Yeah, man. That changed my whole perception of everything.
There's black going on in his pockets. Yeah. And that's
in my pants.
His pockets.
So when he does his crazy El Yucateco pocket bombs on people eating innocently at restaurants, you're in the same company with Hillary Clinton.
See, but I'm thinking though that like the black people are more stingy with their hot sauce though. It's like their secret bottle of hot sauce.
No,
like
I think they're pretty. Oh, you think they just keep it?
Yeah,
for themselves?
They, yeah. Like, you're not sharing.
This is mine.
Yeah, if you didn't bring your own, fuck you.
I don't know. Like one of my bosses actually used to keep Tabasco. Like you would ask for hot sauce, and it would just materialize in his hand. And he was
the David Blaine of hot sauces. I got some right here. Matter of fact,
share the love. He's the one that taught me to put hot sauce on popcorn.
He would
share the Tabasco love.
That makes sense. Yeah. So thank you.
Not a fan of Tabasco anyway, but I do love. Yeah.
So show sponsor El Yucateco. We've all grown to love their flavor.
Yeah.
And if
Hillary Clinton said that she rocked El Yucateco in her purse, I'd vote for it.
Yeah, I think we can.
Is there a video? The video and make something happen. Like make a Yucateco
commercial. There's video out there. You can see it on YouTube.
So, doing it. Yeah. So you can find El Yucateco. Go follow them on Facebook. Their Instagram page is getting up there. We're helping them out with that, I guess.
I'm trying
to get people to. Yeah, we are going to beat them.
That's right.
So get out there and like El Yucateco Hot Sauce on Instagram. And it's El Yucateco _hot sauce. And go try some. If you haven't tried it and you don't know where to get it, we can get it for you.
That's right.
So Mixed Feelings Podcast made new and noteworthy yesterday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Wow.
That's congratulations.
That's a big deal. We didn't even make new and noteworthy.
We didn't.
I wish. Yeah.
Yeah.
So congratulations
but
to them.
We worked hard for a year to get where we're at.
Yeah. We're old and noteworthy.
Yeah. They took the American Idol route. That's cheesy.
It's because they're girls and they're cute and whatnot. Maybe. Yeah. And play guitar.
But
no, congratulations.
Yeah, congrats.
That's
man,
awesome. Legit.
That's really cool.
And
that's
I hope
really
it boosts cool. Your listens.
Yep.
And keep mentioning us.
Yeah,
and
go check them out. Follow them on Instagram. And they're squealy and cute and funny at the same time.
They
so,
are funny.
Yeah, go check them out.
Yep. A little bit of crazy. If you haven't seen the Hot Crazy Matrix, look up that. you can place them somewhere on the scale of the Hot Crazy Matrix.
I don't know them well enough to put them on the Hot Crazy Matrix scale, yeah. But that's a funny video.
So our guest today is, and again, I know the name is kind of wild, Zoltan Istvan, and hopefully we'll get him to pronounce the name properly, but he's a, you look
that's
him up.
That's one of the things I'm most concerned about.
Yes, yeah.
Everything,
yeah,
else, everything else, how do you pronounce
yeah, who
the
cares
name?
With that? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's important.
But he's, let me say a couple of things about him so the audience knows who he is and why we want him on the show. He's a philosopher and he's a futurist. And he's a transhumanist, and we'll talk a lot about transhumanism and what
are they allowing
means.
Transhumanists into the other bathrooms now?
Not yet.
Not no, yet.
Transhumanists
okay.
can't go into bathrooms.
That sucks.
But some bio, he's a columnist for Psychology Today. He writes for Vice's Motherboard. He's given a TEDx talk. He's done reporting work for the National Geographic, Huffington Post, San Francisco Chronicle, Daily Telegraph in London, The Daily Beast, Gizmodo, Wired, like all over the place. He's
been on
a pretty regular correspondent. Yeah. Been on Fox News. He did coverage on the war in Kashmir, and it was made into a documentary called The Pawns of Paradise. Been on Joe Rogan. One thing that I saw about him that I didn't know is before he started, he's also the transhumanist political party's presidential candidate for the 2016 election. But before he did the election, he was the director of a group called Wild Aid, which is an international conservation group that's trying to stop illegal wildlife trade and killing in Southeast Asia. So he's even like a conservationist, et cetera. He wrote a novel that's got some good heat behind it called The Transhumanist Wager. And when he was a young buck of 21, he sailed around the world in a sailboat, and that's what gave him the bug to start doing journalism. So he's gonna call in. We're gonna get him on the show to sort of get his perspective on transhumanism, on why he wants to run for president in a small party. I've always wondered that when I see people running in small parties, because you have to realize
what's
they're
the
not gonna win. But what's the motivation?
What's the end goal?
That? Yeah, because he's spending a lot of his own money on this campaign, so he's obviously got passion behind it. And the other thing that I really want to ask him about is he's the inventor of an extreme sport.
I saw that.
And when I first read about the extreme sport, I thought, okay,
extreme arm wrestling.
That's kind of extreme. No, volcano boarding.
Oh, I did hear about that.
So, and I heard about that. I read about this a while ago, and he gets on a sandboard and he goes down like a volcano, like you sort of ski down a volcano. But from what I saw in an interview with him while I was researching, getting ready for our interview, is that he does it on live volcanoes.
Sounds pretty legit. Like you think there's
he doesn't do it on a dead volcano.
I feel like this though. I feel like it looks like there's magma behind him in your mind. You know, you're thinking about it, and it's just like
him.
Some sad. Like he has to kick his foot because it won't slide right. It's not scooting,
and it just melts him.
But then dust. I have to because I was wondering like how are you going to slide down a volcano? But it's obviously it has to be because it's covered in ash, which would mean that it does have to be a live.
So it's kind of like snow. The ash acts as snow.
So we'll
I guess
we'll ask
that's
him about his.
Yeah.
I'm gonna look that up.
His volcano boarding.
I want to know how many people are doing it.
He said that he started to do it, and it's like now a thing.
It's like Travis Pastrana out there with the Nitro Circus out there volcano surfing.
I have no.
That's what I'm interested in.
No idea what that.
At least check it off his list.
You never seen Nitro Circus?
No.
Oh,
really?
Wow.
No.
Oh, we hit it. Somebody's calling. What happened?
No, nope, that was your
phone buzzer.
Dude, passerbyer.
It is, yeah.
Actually, Mixed Feelings Podcast just hit us up. So,
oh wow, they're psychic.
They heard me talk to them.
They're physic. So let me say something real quick about what transhumanism is for those of you who are listening and don't know. But transhumanism is a belief. A lot of people think it really kind of launched with the research of a guy named Ray Kurzweil, who I've talked about once or twice on the show. And transhumanist beliefs, at least it was made very popular by him in his writings, but transhumanists believe that the cutting edge science that's being done right now, like the wild nature of science, the genetic modifications, the cybernetics, like cryogenics, all these, 3D organ printing, all this stuff is going to get us to a point where we will exceed being a human being.
Right.
And the number one way that they view that is we will, in the words of Ray Kurzweil, we'll be able to live as long as we want to.
Right.
And he doesn't say we'll live forever, because he makes a distinction that at some point you're probably going to go, I've about had enough of this. Like, you can turn it off now.
Plus,
please.
The sun will blow over something.
Right, sure.
Like, it depends on how good you are in the tech
right.
race.
Like, yeah,
can
that's
you,
true.
You might be able to like replace your liver, but yeah. you can't get away from the supernova.
Yeah. That's yeah. So the idea of transhumanism is to try to live as long as you possibly can by extending your own life, by getting genetic hacks, by getting organ replacements, by doing all this stuff, not just because you're sick. You know, it's like people will get a new kidney because their kidney fails, but a true transhumanist would say, oh, damn, I can get a new kidney and I'm going to live that much longer. Go ahead and put it in.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to wait for it to go bad. You're going to do these steps preventively.
A lot of people would be scared of that. You know, like that's one of the big things, is people are afraid of technology and afraid of this, you know, cloning cells and, you know, doing all these crazy things, like, oh my gosh, they made a laboratory baby, you know, like, it's like one of those crazy things.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, if you reach, it's like there's a robotic heart that's out there. And if you reached a point where there had been like 20 million successful robotic hearts installed, and you know, you could install a robotic heart and never have a heart attack, like, the robotic heart's going to live longer than you are. Like, why not get it put in? Not because I'm about to have a heart attack or even because I'm sick, but because I don't want my heart to stop.
Right.
So, I mean,
They're already 3D printing organs and stuff, absolutely. You know, like, it's that's crazy.
It gets pretty crazy.
It's getting there. Yeah.
So that's the primary goal. But then also other, like, a lot of transhumanists also believe not just in the sort of, you know, immortality goal, but if I can become stronger, if I can see at night, if I can, you know, be smarter, if I, you know, if you can isolate the genes that give me, you know, purple eyes, because I want that and it wasn't a normal human trait, a lot of transhumanists say, go for it. You want to hack your own body to exceed human limits, you know, so if you could suddenly, I mean, we talked about it a long time ago, but
cyborg,
like, bulletproof
status.
Skin that you could get,
right.
Like, why not? Not because I'm a soldier, but
Goat Ranchula? Was that the Goat Ranchula?
If I can get Goat Ranchula skin, give it to me. So these are some of the beliefs of transhumanists. The idea that we're on the cusp, like, we're within a handful of years of amazing technological progress, and transhumanists want to use it to extend their own life and to make their life better, to cure diseases, to prevent problems, to end suffering. This is kind of the goal of the transhumanist.
Yeah, a lot of people have the problem, what are you going to do about population? And I think that what's going to happen probably is that...
Are you okay?
Why is that?
You sound kind of down.
You sounded a little down thinking about the population. Like,
Population
problems.
Yeah, you're very like,
Well, I have been up trying to make Skype work on this.
Yeah, that's true.
I got a little bit of whiskey in me.
That's true.
I missed jiu-jitsu today. I'm kind of sad about it. But
so the population.
So population growth, I think that it will probably resolve itself. I think that what's probably going to happen
We'll kill each other for sure.
No, I think that, and we'll see what he says, but I think that a lot of people think, oh, you're going to put like a chip in your eye and your ear and you're going to do these things. And I think what's going to happen before that is virtualization. I think that what's going to happen is some type of nano cell technology is going to be introduced that goes in to your cells and maintains everything. So some type of like intercellular nanotechnology goes in and maintains toxins and things and regenerates cells,
right,
and goes and helps, rejuvenate DNA and keep everything where it needs to be. And then we'll have some kind of gruel that gets pumped into us for nutrition. But really, I think that you're just going to be jacked into the system and you're going to lay in a pod. And those pods can be side by side. You know, a building in New York could hold a ton of people.
So this sounds
Matrix
horrible.
I really believe.
Isn't that the singularity thing or something like that?
I mean, think how close this is. Like, right now, there's people that already do this. They live in their basement and play on World of Warcraft, and they only leave.
But you don't want
to
be there.
Go get a Hot Pocket.
Right.
You don't want to, but you might if you went in there and you had a six pack and you were a jiu-jitsu badass. You know what I mean? And you got all the hot chicks you ever wanted and you didn't have to work ever. I don't know. I'm not saying that it's not my choice. I'm saying predictively, I think that that's the evolution and the path it will take.
Yeah, because people are getting lazier. Like,
if you can be famous.
And not have to work at it, you know.
Some cell phones come with VR goggles now. You know what I mean? Your cell phone comes with VR goggles. So,
well, technology, it's unarguable that technology is going to get crazier.
Yeah.
I just think that there's no replacement for actually going out and doing stuff, you know, like,
and the thing is that, I mean,
there, it might seem like you're doing stuff though.
Well, you would fully feel like you were doing stuff if it was wired into your brain. But I mean, there's other schools of thought as well. Some think that you would, that A, our technology is going to get increasingly better, so we're not going to have to worry about feeding us, et cetera, et cetera. I've read like theories where people will get like biological hacks. Like if you could get like a chlorophyll hack on your skin, right, even though your skin would probably be green, you could start photosynthesizing.
But it doesn't matter because your avatar is not green.
Well, no, I'm saying not in a pod. I'm just saying if the worry is, food for this expanding population,
right,
you know, even like, I mean, I saw a thing about a particular type of shark that goes and eats seals every 6 months. And that's all it eats. It eats a bunch of seals and then it leaves and swims all around the world. And that's the only food it gets because its body is so efficient at the food that it has stored that it now swims all day long for 6 months just on those.
I'm saying
if those things exist in biology right now, if there are creatures that live like that, the transhumanist would think, let's find that hack, do it to my own body. And I only need,
I can eat three, like I need six three babies, other, yeah, six right. babies. And then I can live for 6 months.
I mean, if I can get 300 calories a day instead of 2000, then we're all good.
Can we be vampires? Like that's what this is going towards.
Maybe.
Like, we're going to be like some weird blood sucking, like living in the dark.
That's what I'm saying. There's going to be some efficient method of nutrition that's going to sustain you. Like, I think solar powered.
Well, I'm not disagreeing. I just think that we're going to be dead and gone before this happens. And so it doesn't even matter.
But most transhumanists don't think that.
By
2030 is where it's going to happen.
2029, 2030.
And their argument is like, they don't want to go onto an afterlife because they're fine with what's here as long as we could just make it nicer and live here.
There's no afterlife.
But what I think is like with your chlorophyll thing, my comment about it doesn't matter if your skin's green. I was agreeing with, yes, that's a huge possibility that you could somehow make chlorophyll.
I want to say I'm very surprised that no one said more like borophyll.
More like borophyll.
Thank you.
God. More like Borgen. So you could sustain yourself off of just sunlight. We'd basically be solar powered. There'd be like a lamp inside your pod and then you sit there.
I'm having real issues like imagining this world that you guys are talking
I'm
about.
I'm not. Like,
the world I was painting isn't putting you in a pod. I'm just saying you still have a perfectly healthy life.
Yes, I understand that. Like, but both of those are radically different and I'm having a very hard time seeing it happen.
I just think virtualization is going to outpace actual physical technology and it won't be necessary. Things like being able to think and you hear me right now, so we won't talk anymore because it's just way easier, like voice to text. Like, why hit your fingers on the pad when I can talk and Google's just going to type it for me? I think,
or think about it,
typing's gonna fade away, then you just think about it, you'll hear me, you know what I mean? Things like that are not that far away. So then
that sounds boring,
Brand.
Well, are you really talking? I can't see your lips right now. Yeah.
I'm thinking to you, Bran.
See, that's creepy. And then you'd know what I'm thinking. So privacy's out the window.
Well, but then your blowjobs go away and it's just thinking about a blowjob and like.
No, that's what you're missing. You would really experience the blowjob is what I'm saying. It would be just as real as a real blowjob is what I'm saying. But here's the problem I have with it. I think that without risk.
But like, would it suck though? Like when some guy hacks like your woman program, like. To that where like happen.
Yeah,
like you're getting a blowjob from a woman and all of a sudden it's like Donald a dude's Trump. Face. Yeah. Like all of a sudden you see the hair and you're like, what's going on here?
But this is my question. What happens when there's no risk involved and there's no consequence? Then it's just boring, right? You wouldn't even want to do it. If there's no risk in life or no inherent consequence as a result of a behavior, skydiving won't even necessarily be fun because you just jump out of the plane.
There's no risk. Of anything though,
in that scenario,
yeah, in the pod, like this sounds so horrible.
It's not as fun, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you mentioned, nitro suckers earlier. Those guys, everyone would be that. You would just
the adrenaline
off the wall. Yeah. You wouldn't have the adrenaline because there's no risk involved.
Why wouldn't you have the adrenaline? If the program is that sophisticated, it would give you all biological functions, adrenal gland, like it would simulate.
Yeah, I think
you're not going to die. Maybe you have adrenaline, but you know you're not going to die.
I don't know because
something
like,
is lost there.
You ever had a crazy dream where you woke up thinking like it really happened? You know, like you're all pumped up and
if the sacrifice was giving up the fear of dying when I'm being an adrenaline junkie and as a result I get to live forever in a perfect paradise of my own dreaming and making, I'll just get rid of the worrying about dying.
I think you get bored.
Great.
I think every day you get bored. Every day there's all the fresh vegetables Dave can eat.
That's what I was saying. That's what I was saying. The vampire like thing, because like they've lived for 500 years.
And again, they're bored. That's why I said that Ray Kurzweil specifically says we will live as long as we want to.
I don't think you choose to die though. I think you would just, I mean, I don't know. In the long term, it's hard. You're like,
at the end, like you've done everything. Yeah. Like you're like, you've went through your program and just done everything.
Well, I mean, I can think of things that would keep me busy for hundreds of years. It's like, you know what? Now I kind of want to.
Hundreds? Like what?
Yeah. Like I'm interested.
I want to become a master of chemistry.
Yeah. But if you're, this is the thing though, like you're already a master, like with the programming,
you would just download it like Neo and you'd be a master of chemistry.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
You're going to pick
your scenario, Brent. It sucks. Like, no. I don't like that. Like, it's absolutely like it. Horrible.
That's what's going to happen.
Because the journey is what's part of life.
I'm,
you know what I mean? Like
that.
Learning, being, and becoming, you know.
Well, but again, a lot of the futurists that are out there, there's a futurist named Joel Giroux, or he studied a bunch of futurists and wrote a book about it. And he talks about different sort of levels of advanced humanity. And he says that there will be people who fully embrace all these changes. And there will be people, I mean, there's going to be a stratification. There's going to be people who are like, oh God, that sounds horrible. I want to live, experience, and learn things. So you won't ever load the app that lets you download how to become a helicopter pilot in 5 seconds.
Right.
You'll spend 10 years of your life becoming a helicopter pilot.
As you can choose to.
Meaningful.
And you know, your neighbor that's in the pod next to you has already like downloaded that app to be good at it.
Well, it's no different than doing online gaming. It's
then there's cheaters in online gaming
exactly.
too, though. So you know.
But the thing is, it's not just that there's cheaters in online gaming. There's people who the whole point of online gaming is cheating. That's the only thing fun of it. Like one of my nephews,
that's me.
He only
care about cheating
gaming
and how I can cheat.
And weird hacks and making goats rain from the sky and all this weirdness. And he loves it. And just owning all these people who aren't cheating, and he laughs about it. And that's his whole point.
Yeah.
But then it's like, I know a lot of people that only want to play on servers where there is no cheating. And it's like the same thing.
Yeah,
I think
you could choose the campaign playthrough.
Right.
It's like the holodeck or whatever. Like it seems like, you know, Captain Picard has some consequences before he gets the lady in the red dress.
Right.
He might get shot by the gangsters.
That was surprisingly nerdy for you. I'm impressed.
I've watched a lot of Next Generation.
No idea what you're talking about. Who's Captain Picard?
You know who that is.
I have no idea. Is it the man?
Jean-Luc Picard. You know who that is.
Don't tell me. He's in the wheelchair.
He flies the Millennium.
He's in the wheelchair.
He's
in the wheelchair.
It is the guy in the wheelchair.
Professor X.
Yes.
Yeah. And he flies the Millennium Falcon.
He doesn't fly. He's in a wheelchair.
The Millennium Falcon.
Wait, the hell's the Millennium Falcon?
Is it really called the Millennium Falcon?
No.
Okay. I was throwing in an extra layer of nerd test.
Yeah,
you could I passed.
Stardate.
You could English professor bluff me into believing.
Yeah, you could have said, yeah. Yes.
Well, I've done that in class.
Master Splinter.
You could
I'll
do that
throw
shit.
In like a slight like wrong thing for something that people are nerdish about. And then when someone corrects me, I immediately make fun of them in front of the entire class for being a nerd.
It's really gotcha. Just outed you right there.
Yep.
That's funny. So,
okay. So should we proceed to the phone call?
Sounds good to me.
All right. So welcome to the show, Zoltan. We were talking earlier and we weren't exactly sure how to pronounce your last name because we kept seeing interviews and everyone seemed to pronounce it differently.
Oh, well, that's definitely the case. You can first off pronounce it in any way that you wish.
Okay.
So don't worry at all. But it's Istvan.
Istvan. Okay.
So I said it correctly.
I think you did say it correctly.
They were on me saying I was saying it wrong.
So we have a lot of questions about transhumanism, et cetera, but I wanted to start with a very pressing question, which is, what the hell is volcano boarding?
You know, it's funny. That sport follows me everywhere. So when I was, in 1995, I had been sailing on a very extensive sail trip, and I was in the South Pacific. I saw a volcano, and being a longtime snowboarder, I realized that the face of the volcano looked just like a double double black diamond ski run. So I actually took a piece of wood and kind of snowboard down it. But later, 7 years later for National Geographic, I actually brought my snowboard, a whole film crew and all these other things. And then, at least a video camera and stuff like that. And went and, you know, invented apparently this sport of volcano boarding. At least I think I invented it. No one else had documented it since up until that point. And, you know, it kind of went viral when it aired on the National Geographic Channel and sort of been following me around ever since. And now people all around the world do it in various volcanoes.
Now, on the interview, I saw an interview with you where you mentioned it, and it said that you do it on live volcanoes.
Yeah. So, you know, there's different types. You know, some of the dormant volcanoes are just kind of like sandboarding, but the live volcanoes are what's really, I think, makes it an extreme sport, is because what you're worried about is, A, all sorts of poisonous gases, and B, these lava bombs know, falling all around you. And in the volcano I did it on, you know, there's a couple of grave sites along the crater from tourists who had, you know, gone up there to look and then got a lava bomb right through the, you know, cut them in half. So, and you have your back lava to the volcano. Bombs. So it's really a kind of a game of Russian roulette to make it down to, you know, to a point where you can't be hit by those lava bombs. So that's sort of what makes that sport extreme.
I'm a little confused because I thought that your whole thing was to live forever, and that doesn't sound like you're following any type of strategy.
No, you're right. It's not a very good strategy, and maybe it was the experience of that sport that made me want to do that.
turned you into it. Yeah. You know, are you like surfing down the ash like from the live volcanoes, or is it like how's that work?
Yes, yes. So it's ash accumulates because of trade winds over years. It's called we call it pumice. And to be honest with you, it's very similar to powder snow.
If
it's steep enough, you can just cruise and carve it. And you know, at the same time, you know, yes, it's a very dangerous sport. But part of the transhumanist ideology is that we love life so much, we actually also want to test life a bit. That said, I don't know if I would do that anymore. I got two kids, a wife, and all those other things. I did that when I was right. in my 20s, and I was pretty reckless.
So we talked a little bit. We kind of primed our audience about what transhumanism is, and we gave them kind of our take on it. But I'm curious to kind of start out the conversation with A, finding out, because I know there's an interesting story behind what kind of led you towards transhumanism based on what happened to you in Vietnam. And I was also curious to hear your definition of transhumanism. As well.
Well, sure. You know, I just have a kind of a you know, nonchalant definition. Transhumanism is a social movement of a couple million people that want to use radical technology and science to transform themselves. And they also want to transform their experience of life. And that can be anything from robotic hearts to driverless cars to, you know, bionic limbs and brain implants. But, you know, I've been interested in science fiction and the transhumanist movement actually since I'd been 18 or 19. But when I was working for the National Geographic Channel, I had a really close call with a landmine in Vietnam that I almost stepped on, that my guide kind of pushed me out of the way of. And it just kind of, I'd been covering war zones for a few years before that. And this landmine incident really just kind of shook me inside, like mentally. And I realized I was spending all this time covering these wonderful stories, but not really doing anything to live longer. And I thought, well, I should spend my time and my journalism career and my energy towards trying to conquer death. And so, you know, that's how I got involved in transhumanism in this very activist way.
That's interesting.
Crazy.
I have a question. We were talking before we started the show with you, and my thought personally is that some type of virtualization might outpace physical technology and biological technology. It's my thought that we'll probably end up in a pod of some sort next to another pod in a row of pods, sort of like the Matrix, and that it might not be necessary to alter all these bionic things because we'll just be in a virtualized environment.
Well, yeah, and that's the mind uploading concept, and I, you know, I actually think that's awesome. I would love to do it. you know, there's a couple different ways you can achieve indefinite lifespans or immortality. You can do it through, you know, reversing aging or stopping aging. You can do it through replacing all your organs and with bionic or robotic ones. Organ failure is mostly why people die. And you can do it through uploading your mind so that your consciousness is living in a machine. And I'm a big fan of that. I've been in Second Life and given speeches, campaign speeches there. So a lot of people are working on uploading thoughts, and telepathy now exists as of 2 years ago. And there's a huge giant industry coming. So I would say within 25 years, we have a very good shot of uploading our entire consciousness so that we could recreate ourselves in virtual environments.
I think that the big difference between if you upload your consciousness, my problem with that is it's not me. It's a clone of me. I basically go to sleep. They make a copy of me. I die. That thing moves on.
Yeah. And do you still have a subconscious, you know, well, like all that changes.
Well, the problem is not you anymore. It's just a copy of you that lived on in the Chappie, you know, if you will, versus a slow adaptation and modification of your current body. Seems like that really is you. And it continues to go on. The other one's just a clone when you get uploaded.
Yeah, no, and you know, that comes down to a very tough philosophical choice. Some people will say, well, the clone is you. A clone is, after all, an identical copy of you. You cannot differentiate between yourself. I mean, how do you know that you're not already a clone speaking in this, you know, on this podcast? We have no idea. And as long as we don't have an idea, well, we, it just as well feels like us. So, you know, I understand the philosophical argument against it. But I think when you actually get to reality, we wouldn't even know the difference. That said, though, you know, I think if I was to be uploading a machine, the very first thing I would do is create a couple more me's just to be safe that one doesn't get deleted. And of course, within seconds of creating a clone of yourself, that clone is going to be different from the next clone based on whatever experience it has. So, you know, very quickly it becomes kind of like twins, and then it becomes like cousins. And then, it, you know, who knows? That's how the world sort of broken off that same way, or civilization. So I think I'm okay with the idea of a clone. I do would like to keep my original person, but there's no guarantee that that's going to, you know, occur or make us all feel satisfied.
Right. And I think it also depends on the nature. I know there's an article called The Singularity of Philosophical Analysis by David Chalmers, and he talks a lot about mental uploading, and he talks specifically about a destructive or a non-destructive upload, and sort of there's one where your brain would be destroyed and there's one where you would be retained, and he talks a lot of different issues. And I think one thing that he sort of leads to in his conversation, which I think changes people's mind, is that if you had the technology to say neuron by neuron replace the flesh in your brain with a technology, and if you did a neuron a minute or an hour or something, eventually you would be a completely digitized you. But I don't think people feel like they're losing themselves because it's a gradual process.
That was my argument with adaptation and modification. Yeah, because if at the point that you clone yourself, if you both exist at the same time, you did not live forever. That other thing lived forever when this one goes. But it's like if you move the information from one to another, it seems like that new entity is
like
you.
It's like you're trying to save your memories is what it seems like. Like that would be the cloning. You're saving your old memories and then you're creating new ones as the clone. Would that be kind of the way that it would go?
Well, yes. And I think, you know, I just don't, if there's 10 of me, I don't, and they're exactly the same, they all think, and we're all interconnected. And let's say we could keep each other from developing too far, so we're always interconnected. I would just consider that myself. This is much more intimate than even like me with my daughters, let's say a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, which I have. Yes, they're me, you know, half me, but when they're not really me at all. But we're talking about something that would like recognize everything that we thought about. So I'm quite comfortable having a couple of me around and feeling like that's me. And, you know, one should die for the other if it came down to that, and it wouldn't really be death. You know, so on a philosophical level, I think that's just a choice that everyone makes. It's sort of like a leap of faith. And, you know, whether you choose or not, of course, is up to, you know, is an independent decision. But I just feel pretty comfortable with the idea of dying in one body and moving to the other, as long as it's my memories, my ego, my sense of drive, my rationality, that's basically intact. I mean, I've been a journalist in filmmaking forever, and we always worried about clone copies, because when you had, you know, before, when it was kind of like VHS tapes, there was always a certain amount of quality that was lost. Until we got to the digital world, when the ones and zeros, there was nothing lost unless there was some kind of anomaly. And, you know, I would say, well, it's a clone. And it truly was the exact same, you know, version that I'd had before. Well, I think we're talking about human beings uploading. We're talking about that same exact version. So I'm not too worried about it. I still think it would be 100% me.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is like a more of a Battlestar Galactica, if you're nerdy enough for that, but like a cloud, you know, a cloud representation of yourself. Yeah. And yeah, like you're talking about networked avatars, which I see what you're saying.
So I get your point. My question is that kind of what separates a transhumanist between somebody who is not on that level, is that you're okay with kind of wherever technology leads you?
Well, you know, and this is where transhumanism is such a wide body of ideas and policies and different agendas now. There are some people that would, some transhumanists who would say, I would never upload myself because of exactly the arguments you're presenting. And there are other people who just say, I just don't like the concept of being a machine. What they wanted was to make their biology stronger, to use like CRISPR genetic technology so that they could, you know, become superhumans, but only in the human form. And then there are others who don't mind merging with machines, like maybe having a robotic heart, but they absolutely would insist on retaining their biological brain. So when you talk about transhumanists, they're really all across the map.
And I, some of the stuff I read on your, on the idea of the transhumanist political party, and one of the reasons that I had read that, that you wanted to get involved was to kind of try to almost unify some of the different transhumanist voices. Is that an accurate representation?
Yeah, 100%. It's actually amazing to me how diversified it is. You have to imagine transhumanism like you would have thought of environmentalism 20 years ago. 20 years ago, nobody was green. Nobody was thinking, oh, let's save the planet or let's recycle. Yeah. I mean, it took a long time. It took certain people that created the movement, forming national parks, various lawsuits against the government to you know, deal with a crisis and any kind of environmental crisis. And transhumanism can be seen in sort of the same light. In this day and age, when we talk about being green, everybody has their own version of what that means. But basically, everyone says, well, let's protect animals. Let's not cut down trees. It's pretty straightforward. Nobody likes to hurt the planet. Well, transhumanism, we're hoping, will be sort of the same thing, where at some point, everybody will say, well, technology and science is in the best interest of moving forward as a human being. And whether that's driverless cars or that's completely upgrading yourself to a machine or, you know, downloading all your thoughts or just having, you know, entirely robotic organs or maybe even becoming a dinosaur or a lizard or whatever some of the crazy things that some transhumanists want to do, you know, that is transhumanism that people subscribe to. But we see the movement sort of in terms like the environmental movement. Everyone wants to paint it as black and white, but it's way huge amounts of shades of gray all across the spectrum, both politically and both emotionally and both in even our ideas of what we actually want out of life. So eventually transhumanism will grow up. And right now the Transhumanist Party is trying to unify all those forces, all those people, so that we can kind of convince the world that science and technology is good. Because as you know, we live in a religious country in America, quite religious, and a lot of people would not want genetic editing. A lot of people don't want to become uploaded. A lot of people would say that that's sort of anti-religious. So, you know, one of the reasons we formed the Transhumanist Party was to create a method or a functional political group that could say, well, we represent broadly the interests of the community.
Yeah, I was going to add, that kind of was running through my head about religion. I think that's one of the biggest uphill battles that transhumanists would face, because it would go against the will of the Bible or God, you know, or whatever religion you're into. It kind of goes against everything that it stands for. And you kind of answered that kind of went right into what I was thinking. The other thing I was going to ask, a lot of the online videos and everything we've seen you in, you know, Fox News and, you know, the Daily Mail, they all talk about your transhumanist side and what you're, you know, kind of what you guys stand for. I didn't really see anything on, you know, if, you know, you were to get into the, you know, you're running against Hillary and you're running, you know, or Trump or whoever's up there. You know, how do you take on this huge, just deficit that the U.S. has and just all of the other issues? I mean, you have old men in Congress that aren't going to go along with transhumanist ideas. You know, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, I basically stand for a lot of libertarian principles. So, you know, it's safe to say that I'm kind of fiscally conservative, but very socially liberal. And, you know, if I was to get into, you know, take the position of the presidency, and I actually, be honest with you, I am trying to get people to consider me as a vice president. And we have had some good contact with people. You know, what I would try to do is establish, I guess, a framework, a legal framework, where we would dedicate a huge amount of government resources to science and technology, the kinds of resources that are not going in. I've said that the very first thing I would do is largely cut the military and put a lot of those resources directly into science and technology, especially the field of longevity research. I find it like as a potential presidential, you know, as a potential president, I think the most important thing I need to be looking after is the healthcare and the kind of longevity of America's citizens. I mean, people just simply don't want to die. They don't want to lose their kids to cancer. They don't want to lose their parents to car accidents. They don't want to. Yeah. They don't want to have to be terminal, essentially, which we all are. So I would look to overcome death. And I think if we spend enough money, we could do that. In fact, I've said if we spend $1 trillion, I believe we could do that in about 10 years' time. Now, just so you understand, we spent $6 trillion approximately on the Iraq war.
Sure.
So to spend just $1 trillion on life extension, on trying to, you know, conquer cancer, conquer Alzheimer's, conquer diseases that have made our life horrible is not that big of, it's not that much. And that, those are the things that I would do immediately. You know, I probably wouldn't mess too much with a whole bunch of other things. Obviously, I support brain implants that might, you know, one of my big agendas has been that there's this thing called the trauma alert chip, where you have an implant in your head and the implant can recognize when you suffer from extreme trauma. And they would,
is that the chip that you got? I saw you getting a chip or something installed.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have just a chip in my hand that I can start my car with and just do very basic things. And the new version of it, you can pay at Starbucks with it. But
nice.
What I'm talking about is kind
of the RFID. Yeah.
Yeah. Obama created this brain initiative and they're now, you know, creating kind of brain implants for some of the soldiers coming back to help with depression. But in addition to, you know, helping with depression, you can do things like measure trauma. So if a child falls into a pool, a chip would notify authorities that, hey, the child is drowning. And all of a sudden, 911 would be called and people would come immediately to try to help that that child. Now, normally that child would drown. But you have to understand, the child is just one instance of literally 100,000 a day that are happening in America. And we have almost 2 to 3 million domestic abuse cases that trauma alert chip would notify authorities to stop, you know, people beating up on other people. So something like this could dramatically reduce crime, dramatically reduce deaths. And these are some of the things that I would be trying to push forth, you know, if I was elected president. Of course, I think a huge amount of Congress, you know, 100% of Congress right now is religious. 100% of the Supreme Court and as well as our president is religious. So I don't know if they think the brain implant ideas, mark of the beast stuff. But these are the kinds of things that transhumanists are looking at to try to create a better world where people don't have to die or people at least don't have to suffer as much.
Yeah, I remember my grandma thought when debit cards were coming out that was the mark of the beast. So that's going to be rough for the older you know, generations to come around. I see your points and things. Did you have a question, Brandon?
So in a position of so-called power like vice presidency or even presidency, do you think it's realistic to think that you could actually fund any of this stuff? Like in a society where we spend $32 million on Halloween costumes for your pets, you know, at a congressional level or even like a societal level of regular people, to if everyone just focused, they could get rid of, you know, diabetes or Ebola or whatever it is. Can you really do that?
I was thinking before, I was also thinking too that something like if a kid falls into a pool and you have all these kids chipped, where, you know, I would assume it would take not only an amazing amount of money, but amazing amount of actual manpower. You know, like,
and that's my question. Yeah. Can a person in your position, if you were to be given that power, do you really have any power, or is it a generational thing where old congressmen need to die off and a younger generation with your mindset has to come in before that's realistic?
Well, you know, it's a tough question because yes, some of them have to die off. Yeah. Because we support life extension.
We're science. Not choosing you.
They're not dying off very quickly is the irony. but at the same time, yes, it would be a huge amount of manpower required to kind of monitor this. And I think that's where AI would come into it. But you have to realize when a child dies, the amount of resources that go into just dealing with that and lost wages and lost work by parents who are mourning. So there's I think generally speaking, to save someone's life is to make the economy stronger. There is a very serious economic benefit to these kinds of things. I always look, you know, I hate to say it, but I always look for whether this can make somebody money and whether this can push the country forward economically, because sadly, our country just doesn't seem to operate if you can't make a dollar off it. But I think something like this can be pushed through. And I think a huge amount of convincing Congress that these kinds of things, like life extension, you know, life extension is one of the most important things I focus on. And I keep telling people, if we can reverse aging, we don't need to retire. And when people start saying, well, we don't need to retire, that means we don't have to pay Social Security. All of a sudden, the people's, you know, the older Congress members start saying, wow, now I'm going to have more money to do what I want in my county. So all of a sudden, it starts making more economic sense. And I got to be honest, the people that I have have been talked to me, some of the high up politicians about life extension science have found it interesting right. enough to wonder out loud about it. And I find that very encouraging. I think it's a matter of just years, literally years, before many, you know, top politicians start speaking about anti-aging as very important for the political process and very important for their constituencies, basically to say, look, I can make you live longer. I can make it so that your parents or your children or whatever, your spouses don't have to die. That's a very powerful political tool. And I think that's one of the reasons my campaign has been so noticeable, even though I'm just a small third party independent person, is because when you talk about giving, you know, citizens life extension or living twice as long, that's something that almost anyone can relate to. It's very hard to argue, even if you're very religious, that you don't want to live longer. So I do believe there's a big future in it. It's just a matter of convincing some of those old people in Congress that money can be made on it and it's in the best interest of people.
And I know some of the I read an article, I think it was in Huffington Post that you wrote, and it talked about deathist culture and this idea that most people, because I know you're an atheist, as are most people in this room, according to what I've read about you. But you make an argument that's interesting about the fact that because 85% of our nation believes in an afterlife, that they're not willing to kind of put their money where their mouth is to work on technology because they think everything's going to be great once I die.
Yeah, they're going to the gold city. Yeah.
I mean, is that something that you think has to kind of get overcome?
Definitely. In fact, that's the number one problem facing the whole, you know, transhumanism movement, is that they keep thinking in terms of religious ideology when thinking about these things. They say, oh, you're trying to become gods, and that's blasphemy. And I'm like, no, we're not trying to become gods. Okay, I mean, sometimes I use that language in the Shakespearean sense to have fun, but what we're really trying to do is just do what we've always done with tools, you know, make our lives better, make it easier, make it so that we don't have to work as hard, or make it so that we can, you know, have better health. And when you paint it in that light, I think everyone says, well, science and technology is very useful. It's when we paint in the fact that we're going to become cyborgs and have chips and the government's going to be looking into our brains and we're all going to be interconnected. That's when we freak people out. So there's a balance to play with that. But getting over this deathist culture is critical. And even though I'm an atheist, one of the main messages I've been having recently is that not dying doesn't have to conflict with your version of religion.
No.
You know, first off, I'm not saying you're not going to die forever. Even transhumanists would never say that. Maybe I do want to die. Maybe in 2,000 years, I've had enough of this life and it's time to check out. And, you know, I think if a religious person understands that they'll have the option when they want to check out, then they will feel a lot more comfortable about supporting life extension science and get over their deathism. I think the most important thing people need to realize is that, you know, the way we die now, where, you know, it just happens arbitrarily, we get in an accident or cancer comes or whatever, is everyone seems to think it's natural. And I'm like, there's nothing natural about getting cancer, especially when you live in an environment that might have a ton of pollution. We are in charge of the scientific process of our body. We can change things. And, you know, again, if you feel religious, you can check out whenever you want. However, in the meantime, I think there'd be a lot of people, especially the younger generation, that are going to say, wow, I don't subscribe to this deathist culture at all. I want to live as long as I want to live, and I want control over that end of life stuff.
How do you envision population growth, though, with like 7 billion people on the planet exponentially growing? Do you have a solution in mind or a vision for that? What's your idea for that?
Sure. And this is the number one, I'd say, issue I get asked when I talk about life extension, is that, what do you do if there's 15 billion people on the planet? Well, most scientists would agree that we can have 15 billion people on the planet quite comfortably. The problem is we can't have it under the circumstances we have now, right, where 1% of the rich control everything. And, you know, we have a huge middle class and a giant, you know, kind of poverty stricken class. The distribution of resources has to be more, it just has to be more social equality and more economic equality. And, you know, even though I do subscribe to mostly libertarian ideas, I do also endorse a universal basic income where everyone at least has the basics covered, food, healthcare, and something over their head to protect them so they can raise families and whatnot. I think if we distributed resources quite a bit differently and we use a whole bunch of new technology like vertical farming or genetic editing to regrow forests, so we're not destroying the planet, or meatless meat is a classic one where we don't need to, you know, kill 150 million animals a day to feed humanity. We can grow this stuff. And if we do things like that, I think we can make it so that we can have a huge amount more people on the planet and have lives be a lot better. It's just going to take better organization of the system, which of course is why I'm running for president.
And I agree that you could probably sustain 15 billion people, but just simple math and exponentiality, like when you have 15 billion people, 1 year passes and everybody has babies, that number gets huge really fast. It starts doubling, you know? So, I mean, where does it stop? Do we stop reproducing?
Well, so and this is where it gets really interesting. One of the things you have to understand is, first off, to get to 15 billion people would take 30 to 50 years. And I can assure you, I mean, I think in 30 to 50 years, I would be very surprised if we're human beings. We would never be having a conversation via Skype. We would be having it via our minds, via implants that have already connected, you know, probably 10 of them to our brains and holographic images and maybe even downloading ourselves and stuff like that. So by the time we get to a point when we actually have these huge population levels, we're already going to be living probably indefinitely. So the real question is, if you right now, and all three of you, if you knew you were going to live 1,000 years, would you have kids in the first 100 years?
Good point.
Would you have kids in the first 200 years? You know, and it changes the social institutions, transhumanism, because I think a lot of people would say, wow, having a child is such a big responsibility. I'm going to push it off and go do a whole bunch of other careers or a whole bunch of other things. And, you know, I think the other important thing to understand is 50 years into the future, we might not be eating, eating and pooing and all these other things. I mean, these are pretty
archaic.
These are just not very good mechanisms for a robot would never create a system where you had to eat and had to drink and had to breathe oxygen and had to poo. You know what I mean? A robot would never do that. He would create it'd probably be completely a genderless society. The things we're going to be in the future are not going to be necessarily needing things like food or oxygen. In fact, they're already working on something right now called the biolung for burn victims that literally replaces your lungs. But the interesting thing about the biolung is it can breathe all sorts of different types of airs. In fact, when you talk about volcano boarding, I don't need to worry about methane coming from the volcano anymore because I can breathe it with the new biolung. So this is what the future looks like even 20 or 30 years into the future. So we talk about having kids, you know, kids maybe in virtual reality. I don't, you know, and it could be a very different system.
Well, and I did have a question. You were talking about, you know, politicians taking this in and really, you know, you're talking about longevity of life. I kind of have a fear of, you know, that they're taking it in on the thing that, oh, we can live longer, we can keep control. You know, like, is that one of the things, how is that going to be taken care of? You know, I understand that you want this available for everybody on Earth, but
it does seem like the 1%.
The 1% would take control, use our tax money, build these things, create, you know, where they can stay alive longer, do all these different things, but the lower class just doesn't get it.
Yeah, and you know, this is the second most popular question I get asked. And what's to keep that 1% from kind of stealing transhumanism and creating a dystopia on planet Earth? I mean, in many ways, we sort of are there already. Well, the good news for me, at least, and you know, I live in the Bay Area, is that a lot of the new CEOs, whether they're billionaires or not, seem to be more grounded, more left-leaning, more democratic type of people. It's not the kind of robber barons, JP Morgans of the yesteryear when they were like getting women and children to work, you know, in factories for 18 hours a day. I think today's new CEO is much more in line with Bill Gates, where they really want to make an effort to help the world with their money and with the technology they create. And I also think a lot of the companies like Facebook, take Mark Zuckerberg, for example. If we knew Mark Zuckerberg was a jerk, we would probably stop using Facebook and his company would plummet the value of it. Same thing with Tesla and some of these other, you know, Google. I think the people that are creating these technologies are much better people than we've ever had in history in terms of those who are super rich. So eventually they're going to replace a lot of those other billionaires who are older and dying off and hopefully bring us a much better future. And they're not the kinds of people, it's hard to imagine, you know, the Google guys, for example, just taking off of this technology and making it so no one else wants it. I think they would stand up and say, no, the right thing to do is to make a much better world. And so I'm confident that the new and younger set of billionaires coming into existence right now are actually after the best interests of society as a whole.
And you talk about robotics. I was looking earlier at the sort of the platform of the Transhumanist Party, and two of the elements, number I think 5 and 12, that stood out. They both mentioned the fact that somewhere between 25 to 30 years from now, you think that robots are going to do most of the jobs. And that would really, I mean, what impact would that have on the economy? And do you think that's going to be a positive or a negative thing?
So, you know, I just wrote an article for TechCrunch, and it said, the title of it was "Will Capitalism Survive?" And I really don't think it will. As I hate to say it, not to be crazy or anything, but look, my wife is a surgeon. And at a conference, I recently said, within 15 to 20 years, expect robots to deliver babies better than you. And my wife's an OBGYN. And I thought, well, if a robot can deliver a baby better and do it endless hours, right. And my wife, who trained 19 years, well, then, many people's jobs will be replaced. I mean, you know, and we already have seen driverless trucks go across Europe. We've already seen robotic waitresses in China. We've already seen robots on the floor of the Lowe's self-improvement stores helping people. So we're all going to be replaced. Journalists especially, which is what my specialty is, it's very easy to aggregate news and create readable articles that can just be done in literally 15 seconds versus my 5 or 6 hours. I hate to say it, but we're all going to be replaced. Now, the question is, how can we make it so that transition gives us more free time and more wealth and allows a much better world? Well, this is why I said I support a universal basic income for this reason, because I'm completely confident within 10 to 15 years, you're going to see a solid 30 to 50% of the jobs wiped out. And that's so huge. I mean, we've never even encountered something like that. So I think the governments will have to step in and make sure that this doesn't turn into like some ultra depression where all these jobs are lost and that we can continue. I mean, it's going to be great in a way to have robots work for us. I would like that. Who doesn't, you know? And maybe we'll be on the beach playing our guitar, or maybe we'll be creative artists or whatever it is. But I encourage that kind of development. But I also realize that the government's going to have to make sure that people don't revolt when they lose their jobs and there's no more income. There's going to have to be something, a push and give here.
Well, I think if there is I think the idea of the universal basic income taking over makes it work, because then, you know, your average, you know, your food's being cooked by a robot, your babies are being delivered by a robot, your classes are being taught by a robot, but you're still getting an income.
How's that work?
Well, the money would still be being generated. I mean, all the capital is still being generated. All the food is being mined by robots.
You just get free money?
You would get a basic universal income by the government. They're starting to look at it all over the world right now.
That's why Zoltan's saying that capitalism wouldn't survive. You would want to think that the workforce would adapt to support the new industry, like you're going to build robots. But in this scenario, the robots would just build robots. So
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I don't think that would breed laziness, though? I mean, there's already so many lazy people on the earth that don't want to work and don't want to make an income.
And this is where it gets, you know, I have the strategy for how to keep people fed and survive. I don't know what they're going to do. And this is very interesting because I hope we don't create a whole generation of just drug users, or as some of these dystopian novels that we've been reading of, you know, about for 20, 30 years, where nobody does anything and just immerse themselves into virtual reality, or like some of the, you know, Orwellian stuff that we've seen. But, you know, that said, that's going to be for everyone to decide how they handle it. I think, you know, I think it basically it'll probably set up something like where, let's say a company like General Motors is going to automize, you know, 90% of its business. Well, any of those profits that come from that, you know, those kind of upgrades should have to some extent be redistributed, because, you know, if every company does this in the world, then only the rich would get richer. So at some point, you know, governments have to step in. But what people do with that, that's a whole different question. I'm not that optimistic when we talk about this one. I'm very optimistic that the world could be better because of free time.
Yeah.
But we might create a whole generation of very, very lazy humans. It might be like WALL-E. You know, I don't know if you've seen that movie WALL-E, but it could be like that. That wouldn't be very fun.
And that's what they say about idle hands. You know, that's a true thing. You know, when you don't have anything to do, you usually get into trouble. You know, so I think, and that's the thing, you know, a lot of people talk about free college and it should be, you know, available to everybody. But I think that if you, I just where I stand, and I'm not saying everybody's wrong about that, but if you want to go to college, whether you have money or not, it's available and you can go. You know, I mean, that's the other side of it. You know, you have to work a little harder for it to get that money to go to, you know, get FAFSA and, you know, and fill out paperwork and do those things. It's not just free, but that means that you want to do it. You know, so I'm not saying that, you know, it can happen and we don't have the belief in people that, you know, that they won't choose the wrong things to do. But we already have a society where people are shooting and killing each other, you know, that don't want to work, that, you know, that are just that expect everything to be given to them. And it seems like that we're kind of catering to them on that level. I mean, do you feel that way? I mean, I know you don't really, I know you probably don't feel that way, but I mean, it's just, that's kind of how it's seeming to me.
Well, no, and we are catering to them, I'll be honest with you, because what's happened is, and I know this for myself from being an entrepreneur, you know, sometimes it's better to just keep paying a system to keep quiet and keep growing myself. And I look at my individuality as sort of what, you know, that's sort of what's been happening is I do this all the time, where it's just easier to keep everyone happy. And, you know, those that want have incentive to work will work, and those that don't, unfortunately, you know, that does breed a population that some of them are incredibly lazy. However, and this is where it gets very interesting, I think, you know, with so many brain implants coming in the future and so much new types of like tying into the matrix, we might have, you know, robots that, for example, you know, instruct us how to be more intelligent and live with us and don't allow us to be lazy.
Yeah.
And maybe there'll even be government policies where you don't get to collect a UBI or universal basic income if you are, you know, doing nothing all day. Now, again, this would be kind of against my libertarian ideas, but I'm willing to at least think about it just because, you know, I don't want to see a society become like WALL-E where nobody does anything. And we can't just give away free money and, you know, and watch people waste away. That would not be a very ethical thing to do. It would not be a very humanitarian thing to do. So we have to create a system where we invite people to be the best that they can be, but also provide them with the resources to do that. And that would be the ideal society. That would be the ideal kind of way a government might operate in an individual's life.
Yeah, I could see a model where maybe you know, a required enrichment or self-improvement, like you are required to complete a certain amount of units in education or in public service or guitar lessons, whatever it may be, to keep improving you and show those credits in exchange for that universal income.
Yeah. In my novel, The Transhumanist Wager, there are incentives like that, where if a family stayed healthy, they paid a lower tax base. If they could prove that they were doing things that were good for the public as a whole, they also paid a lower tax base. And, you know, some families became very wealthy that way just by not paying any taxes because they were doing good things. And, you know, that's sort of how the nonprofit status works right now. But I do think incentives are a good way to keep society moving forward, even if sometimes those incentives seem like, you know, they're a little bit too authoritarian. But, you know, in the end of the day, we're a world, we're a species, and we're trying to do the right thing for our tribe. And hopefully, as one giant tribe, we can make you know, make the world a much better place.
I'm loving your novel, by the way. I'm not all the way through it, but I read sci-fi for a living and teach it and write it myself. And I really enjoy the picture that you paint. But I do, you said we could ask cutting edge questions, and I do have one cutting edge question. You had mentioned earlier that if they could make 10 clones of you, that you would be all for it. And you also mentioned earlier that some transhumanists wouldn't mind having their body modified until they were a dinosaur or a lizard. So my question is, who would win in a fight, 10 Zoltans or one Dino Boy?
Yeah, that's tough. It's so funny. You know, there, I really have friends right now because of this. You've probably heard of the CRISPR-9 technology.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends that are really trying to do crazy things, including splice plant DNA into their bodies, into their arms or their skin, so they can go out into the sun and try to get energy directly from the sun. And so they don't have to eat, yeah. You know, and I mean, you're talking about.
We actually talked about that right before your segment came on. So about photosynthesis and how that would affect us.
It's crazy because you're talking about solving world hunger. And, you know, we still have around 8,000 or 9,000 kids every day that die from malnourishment. It would be a huge, like, humanitarian great thing to do.
Yeah, that would be.
Unfortunately,
crazy.
It's not working right now. And there's no guarantee it will work. But there's a probably good chance at some point in the future, someone's going to devise a way to be like plant man or plant woman or something and do that. And, you know, it's crazy the things that they're doing. It's crazy the new types of editing capabilities we have. We will grow tails probably within 10 years' time. We will grow a third eye in the back of our head. We will be able to do those things. And, you know, for some of those transhumanists who really love biology but aren't so keen on the machines, you know, that's going to be their thing for sure.
Right. So we wanted to make sure we're running tight on time, and we want to make sure that you can give us some information about where our listeners can go to find information about your campaign, to find different links, different contacts for you.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, my own presidential website is ZoltanIstvan.com, and you can just Google my name and it should pop up. The Transhumanist Party's website is transhumanistparty.org. And we haven't talked about it a little, but I did drive a crazy...
I wanted to talk about it. It's so awesome.
That's why I'll mention it real quick. I drove a 40-foot bus that looked just like a coffin across America from San Francisco to Washington, D.C. And we delivered a Transhumanist Bill of Rights to the U.S. Capitol building. And if you go to immortalitybus.com, you can watch a whole bunch of very cool videos that we did. And read all the articles, because we had journalists on us and we traveled for 4 months. So that was a pretty fun road trip in kind of following in the footsteps of some of the crazy bus trips of the 1960s, except this, we were a very modern bus with, you know, virtual reality gear on board, drones on board, biohackers on board with chips in them, and much more of a modern perspective.
And at least you didn't wreck and die in the bus, because that would have been very ironic.
total irony. We talked about that all day long. I think a lot of the journalists were a little bit disappointed. So we drove that across the country, and that was a whole bunch of fun. And we had a kind of an open invitation to any American that wanted to join us. It wasn't just transhumanists. A lot of people jumped on board that, you know, had nothing to do with us, just wanted to be on for the ride. And so it was a really fun trip.
Awesome.
Well, we really appreciate your time tonight. It's been an eye opener. I followed transhumanism and the singularity and all that stuff pretty closely, and I always want to try to bring it to our audience. And there's no one better to have gotten than you. So I really appreciate your sit down with us.
Oh, well, it's been my pleasure to speak with you. I had a great time chatting with you all.
Okay, thanks, man.
Thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you.
Okay, so that was Zoltan Istvan, and
So you know, because I know he said his website, so you could go to it, and you might have no idea how to spell the last name. It's Istvan. So
Zoltan. Very, very
so
simple.
Even though it sounds like Istvan, it's Istvan. So check him out. Cool stuff on his websites. Really cool videos. His TED Talk is informative. I highly recommend his book, The Transhumanist Wager. It's a really cool book. You get it on Amazon.
I thought you were with when you were like going to ask him about the 10 of him copies, And then, you know, the lizard people, I really thought you were going a different direction. I thought you were going to ask him what type of hot sauce he liked, or if he liked hot sauce. And I was like, oh yeah, Dave's going for it.
No, and to be honest, like, he was really straightforward with every answer that he gave us, but yeah. I don't feel like I got an answer to who he thinks would win.
You didn't.
10 virtual Zoltans or one lizard boy?
Well, that's just a lizard boy beating up a computer though. You know, like, well, who's gonna win? Uploaded.
I don't know what lizard boy is. I didn't get it really.
Well, he said that some transhumanists want to have their body transformed to be a dinosaur or a lizard. So I
am maybe a lizard dinosaur boy.
Yeah. I wanted to know who would win.
Yeah. So I thought you were going for the Yucateco
hot sauce.
Yeah.
I almost did.
Need to send him a little package of,
we'll have to send him some Yucateco and give him some.
And a shirt. That'd be rad if we get him to wear a shirt.
The one thing that I didn't get a chance to ask him about that I was interested in is one, like, number 14 on the list of a transhumanist political party. Like, one of his goals is that as president, he wants to develop an international consortium to create a transhumanist Olympics, which sounds badass. Like an Olympics that would be, where everyone's hacked and can, like that could be so odd. Like, still have a regular Olympics.
Maybe in 30 years. Right now, then, it's going to be like, I look how many paper clips I can clip with my finger.
I say you don't have a regular Olympics anymore after that. Like,
it's going to be lame Olympics. I'm telling you, it's going to be like picking up paper clips with your magnet.
Well,
now.
Like 30 years from now, it's like
shuffleboarding
like
without the
even
broom.
Looking at like all the baseball scandals and like the Lance Armstrong scandals. And it's like, these guys were like top of the game, like changing the sport.
True.
And then it turns out they were hacked. So let's just make a version of baseball where everybody's hacked and let's see how dope it is. Like, let's get everybody on a bike hacked and see how dope it is. And then, I mean, it just becomes
normal. You know what I mean? If everybody's volcano surfing,
I was really curious about his chlorophyll friends that are supposedly hacking. I just pictured like a laceration with like a leaf stuck in the hole. They're like,
a
carnation.
I don't think that's how that works.
I'm pretty sure that that works. It's a pocket knife and a carnation.
Painting themselves green and walking out in the sun.
They're picking scabs.
Is this working?
They're picking scabs and putting moss on it and letting it dry.
I don't know. Well, that was a very interesting conversation, and it was something that was totally different. You know, my thinking is a little bit different as far as I'm really concerned about, you know, like you're talking about overpopulation. And I think there's just so many unanswered things that can't be answered because we don't have the technology yet.
Sure.
So we don't know the impact, you know? And
yeah, I think society will evolve to a weird thing. Like he was saying, we'll have a different mindset. We have different priorities.
I just think there's so many, like my big concern, like not the money, not the resources, not, you know, living forever, but there are so many people that are just inept now. You know what I mean?
Well,
you would have to hack them and make them smarter in some way.
And I know you had mentioned like a couple of times that like, isn't it just going to breed like a bunch of lazy people? But at the same time, here's the thing. If we genuinely had robots picking all our food, cooking all our food, cleaning our houses, filling up our cars, driving us around, who gives a shit if somebody's lazy? Go be lazy. Here's like everything we need to survive. Like, the robots are growing food a million times more effectively than we can.
If
there is enough food and water and shelter and everything for everyone, why do I care if my neighbor
is tapped in all day long? Is that Brad will have no babies to punch if we stop having babies.
Maybe so.
Yeah, you guys will be upset about it.
Or
you're
going to be forever employed because you'll be a professional baby.
I can have robots make me babies and I can just punch them all day long.
They will hire you for population control because you just run around punching babies.
Like, another one's born, like the robots are just pumping them out and I'm out there just punching them in the face.
Well, think of the joy you would have like once transhumanist babies are being born and they have like bulletproof skin and like you could punch babies all day long and like
you gotta cry.
Seven minutes after intellectual Zoltan got signed off, we're punching
you get you brung this up.
I brung it up. He made it bulletproof.
Well, you know, like that really is a concern. Like, I'm on board with living longer and being able to turn myself into a vampire, but I think that man, it's just crazy to think that
when you say vampire, you're just referencing like immortality, right?
I want to suck people's blood. Okay. Like, that's what I want to turn into if I'm a transhumanist. Okay. I want to live, but I want to be like a Blade Runner, I want to be able to go out in the sun.
You could do that now.
Hybrid.
You could drink blood for sustenance.
I want to be able to live off of it though.
You could. Or you want it to be a requirement, so you have to.
Yes. Yes, has to be.
So and you're already a transhumanist.
That's
a
weird. I'm there. I'm getting there. Yeah. But like my issue is that I think it's a weird, and it would be a mindset thing to just, and that's the thing, like everybody just gets money. Like, why would you need money then? Like, if everything was just free. You know what I mean? Like your food, they're making the food. Like, why would you need it? Well, ideally,
that's why he was saying it would be the end of capitalism, because you wouldn't. I mean, if
but it was you wouldn't need the UBI.
If it was effective, and I mean, at first you would. There would need to be a transitionary period, I think, where you still needed money to go to the store and buy stuff. But I mean, if the system got efficient, and I mean, I look at like the efficiencies that Amazon does on getting a package to my house on Sunday afternoon when I ordered it on Saturday night because of their logistics. But it's like if those logistics, especially if you throw artificial intelligence in the mix, if you've got some super intelligent computer that can figure out logistics and growth and all this stuff far better than we can, and it's just it doesn't we've got all the power we need, we've got all the food we need.
The sad truth is it's going to be a bunch of fat fucks playing Candy Crush and fucking Angry Birds all day in front of some tablet thing. That's
but
all
again,
you can do.
Who gives a shit? Go do it. Who cares? Go eat yourself to death and die. I'm going to study art and I'm going to learn chemistry and I'm going to become a painter and I'm going to cut my ear off and do all this. It's like,
and it'll grow back.
Like, who cares? Like, if there's, that's the problem. It's like right now we look at that as a drain on society, as people who aren't participating. But when they have no need to participate, when our society isn't suffering from them not participating because we don't need their money, we don't need their manpower, who
but
gives a shit what
what's
they
the point of coddling to them then? You know what I mean? What's the point?
Because they're a human being and we would all get the same universal basic requirements.
I don't agree.
I think that kind of sucks. Like,
well, then go do more. Go build a better robot and grow your own crops.
To what end, though? It's like self-betterment, but no accomplishment that would sustain. I don't know, man. It sounds it's inevitable.
Because
the
machine has its hooks in you, man. Because you can only see dollars.
I understand your side of it, and I mean it's a good point. But like, if there's no challenge to,
why isn't there a challenge
to get anything? Like, there's no challenge to be anything.
There's no challenge
to do whatever you want.
There's no challenge to make money. There's still a challenge to become as good a painter as Pablo Picasso. There's still a challenge to climb Mount Whitney. There's still although it's called something else now. There's still challenge. I mean, there's still challenges to become a black belt in every martial arts on the planet. Like, I would rather do that than have to spend 8 hours a day grading shitty essays and teaching lectures. It's like I could spend my life doing more meaningful pursuits, and everybody else has that chance. And if they mess it up and do something,
it doesn't cost any money to stand on the beach and fucking paint. You could do that.
Yeah, but I couldn't because then I would starve to death.
No.
Yeah.
You can go without food for 30 days.
People give you a fucking dollar here and there. You could do it.
No, thanks.
Those dudes probably make good money.
It's coming out now.
It's not coming out now. Right now, we live in a society where I can't be a fucking freeloader.
There's all kinds of freeloaders.
I'm not going to be.
They're everywhere.
But a freeloader has a lower standard of living than the one I am accustomed to.
I see how this is. I see what's going on here.
But if the robots are giving me all the things I need to survive comfortably, then it frees me up to the chance to stand and be a shitty painter.
So right now, Dave, someone offers you a room on an organic fucking farm, and they're going to give you a complete gourmet vegan diet every single fucking day, and you can sit in a room and paint for the next 50 years. You do it?
I wouldn't do that because I really don't want to paint. If I could sit in a room and write for the next 50 years, I would probably
do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not bored. There's nothing.
No. You get bored.
I feel like you get bored.
Well, that's the thing. It's not like you're immortal, so now you must write for eternity. It's like, no, I write for 5 years and get bored with it, and then I paint, and then I learn this, and then I study judo.
He
and
says
then
he don't want to paint, but he keeps going back to the painting.
I'm just throwing out stuff.
I could become
a brewer. I could become a baker. I could become a fucking candlestick maker. Like, the thing is, I can do. I would have the option to do whatever I want to do.
I like attacking him.
Dave just pulled the super secret vegan. It's a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, and he put a brewer, a baker, and a candlestick maker so that he didn't kill any animals in his example. That was impressive.
And I have beer in the future.
I'm kind of upset at you, Dave, how much you hate humans, but yet you
pronounce human just human. In case you say it later. I don't want you to be embarrassed. Yeah, humans.
Yeah, you want to make everyone live forever. This is news to me.
Well, because ultimately that society, there would be no killing cows. You know, that's why, true. Yeah.
You wouldn't need them. I'd say we get rid of all the animals.
There would be no more elephants. and no more unethical treatment of elements.
That's right.
Elements, I said.
There would be Dino Boys and Elephant Boys, though.
I don't get the Dino Boy thing.
I'm going full on Velociraptor. I'm turning into.
Yeah, I can just see it.
Just run around.
How to go again?
Run around swiping babies.
Okay, so I want to give some sponsor shout outs. As always, we want to thank El Yucateco for being awesome and creating delicious foods or delicious condiments for delicious foods or delicious condiments for bland foods.
Or making shitty food better.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. Yeah. Making a delicious condiment for a horrible food that then makes the horrible food good food. Mm-hmm. We thank you. As always, we appreciate it. Digital Creations for all of our swag and mugs and mouse pads and bottle openers and all the good stuff that we ship out to people. We always want to give a big shout out to Salt 7. I actually meant to ask Zoltan if he had ever floated, because I was curious to see if that sort of mental, physical transcendency thing appealed to him. But Salt 7 here in Bakersfield, if you're in the area, if you're anywhere near the area, check out Salt 7 because you deserve a float today.
Actually, we can just contact him and let him know about him. I'll stop by if he's in the area.
I'll give him
going to LA or something.
Email shout out and let him know. And if you live outside of Bakersfield, come in. If you live like way outside of Bakersfield, check it out, fly in, or look for something else. But if you're within a couple of hours, don't fly anywhere else. Come here and float at Salt 7 because it's awesome. And then finally, Darkside Graphics, find them on Facebook. And we want to thank them for our t-shirts and our graphic use. Anybody I forgot?
No, I know we have some Instagram people. I'm going to have to get them next round because I don't have it written down yet.
We'll hit them up.
Yeah. We don't care about you.
We do. Thank you for everyone on Instagram this week. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah, it's getting crazy.
Yeah, social media is a full-time job responding. Yeah, it's been crazy. I don't know how real famous people do it because we're only like half-ass
they have
famous.
People. They don't. They hire people who do it for them.
Social media management.
Is that what's up?
Yeah, that's what's up.
Well, we're on the edge from half-ass
just so you know. We actually retweet your tweets and we actually re-comment to you and stuff. Joe Rogan, somebody does that for him. So,
but I still think he's cool. I still got a bro crush. Still love him.
I guess. Just because you guys are both bald.
I'm going to go see him this weekend.
Both got receding hairlines.
Thanks.
You going to go see him this weekend? I didn't get invited.
I'm telling you right now, until you made that bald comment.
I'll tell him to his face.
Joe Rogan will choke you. That fool's a black belt.
I don't care. Just because you're a black belt don't mean nothing.
You think you beat up Joe Rogan?
I'll beat up anybody.
Not Joe Rogan.
If I'm madder than you, I'm beating you up. I'm telling you that right now.
We already have a plan. I'm going to run, you know, those like Amazon crying baby masks that you can buy.
Yeah.
I'm going to run up on Joe Rogan, slip that son of a bitch over his head, and then he's going to think he's a baby, and then no baby can defeat Brad.
He will spinning back kick. It's over. He will choke Brad. No.
It's over. He'll have a baby
head. Ain't nobody
head
joking me.
As soon as he has the baby head, all of Brad's superpowers come out, and it's over. It's a done deal.
All right.
Fight between. Here's the thing.
You know what?
Here's
my whole life, I'm mad now because my whole life, Brent has always just not thought anything of me. I'm upset.
No, here's the thing. No backtracking now.
You're backpedaling now.
Ten Zoltan.
I'm never good enough. I never can beat anybody up.
Ten Zoltan his fans can beat up a dinosaur, and Brad can beat up Joe Rogan in a baby mask.
Yes, that's happening.
That was a strange equation that just happened. Yep.
I'm upset. I'm hurt.
So you're still going to the show, though, right?
No, I ain't going to shit.
You'll go with me.
No, I ain't.
No,
I got better things to do. My birthday's Saturday.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't get an invite. I didn't hear about that.
It's because we're having a party the following week.
So am I invited?
No.
Not now,
motherfucker.
I'm not eating cake anyway. I'm on a diet.
Good.
All right.
Are we done here? I'm leaving.
Yeah. All right.
All right, don't be retarded. Well, now, don't you tell me to smile. You stick around, I'll make you put your
change the world, I will plot and scheme.
Mario C likes to keep it clean. Wanna shine like Ace of Theme. Fun radicals, that's my dream. Motif for sticking to me.
You've old school hip hop. Dark suits and molasses socks. The rise is spread just like a box. So the music is loud, they can elect shout.
I am known to do the what?
What?
So known for the Flintstone flop.
Flop.
Jimmy D getting biz on the crop.
Crop.
Geeksy boys known to let the beat
drop.